Student loan debt can be absolutely crushing. And this was Bobby Mattson's experience. See, he and his wife had over six figures in student loan debt and were struggling to figure out how do they get out from underneath this. Plus all of the other things that were piling up with life, credit cards, cars, all of the various responsibilities, and it actually impacted their ability to live their life. See, they were putting off starting a family because they were worried that they wouldn't be able to financially support children. And through this experience, Bobby, as an engineer, started building software to try to navigate for him and his wife all of the various programs, tools, resources, refinancing options, and help kind of optimize what is the best solution for them to get out of student loan debt as quickly as possible beyond just put more towards it and use all the different tools that are out there. And out of this experience and process, they were able to get out of student loan debt, and the birth of Pay It Off, Bobby's company, came about. And so Pay It Off is focused on student loan debt specifically, but now they're expanding into other loans. And how do you quickly get out of debt and optimize for that? So today's conversation, we talk all about the challenges that debt presents, and then also how companies, fintechs, banks, financial institutions can utilize Pay It Off as a back-end service to help people get out of debt more quickly. We also hear how Bobby went through his own experience of starting Pay It Off and the challenges that he's faced as an entrepreneur and on his entrepreneurial journey. So without further ado, I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Silicon Alley podcast featuring the Bobby Mattson. Are you interested in growing and scaling your business? Welcome to the Silicon Alley Podcast, where you'll hear from entrepreneurs, venture capitalists, and top performers on what it truly takes to grow and scale a business. You'll walk away with actionable insights you can apply in your own business and life. Now, to William Glass, the CEO and co-founder of Ostrich, and your host of the Silicon Alley Podcast. Bobby, welcome to the Silicon Alley Podcast. Super excited to have you on today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Excited to talk to a fellow New York City co-founder or founder in the fintech space. So I think we're going to have a really fun conversation. You've got a really interesting personal story and journey of what brought you in. So I'm excited.
Yeah, this will be a lot of fun. Excited to dig into it.
Yeah. So for a little context, you founded this company called Pay It Off, right? And it's in the student loan space. I'd love if you could just kind of like talk to me a little bit about like your story that led up to Pay It Off, because it's personal. It's not just, you know, let's pick a problem to solve in fintech and loan repayment, but there's a deeper why behind what you're building.
Yeah, and it's really, you know, the why I get up every day and work on this the way I do, you know, the 12 to 14 hour days it takes to make it happen as a founder. I think it started a very personal story for us. Like, my wife and I had six-figure student loans, credit card debt. This was around 5 or 6 years ago. We're living in Manhattan and realizing that it's really keeping us from starting a family. You know, I think that was kept us from, you know, even thinking about a six-figure mortgage or anything like that. So at that moment, I really got frustrated because most of my career had been in either company building or in working on products that helped people make complex decisions simple. So I worked on Fandango, Groupon. You know, if you're searching for a theater, like I led the team that optimized that algorithm. And I really felt like there was a way to solve this problem we were having with some of those skills. So it felt like a skill fit to basically just look at the complexities with this debt. You know, student loans, there's no debt more complex than that, because most of the debt's federal. So it's subject to crazy regulatory requirements. So I just started codifying the regs at night, weekends, and really trying to pathfind our way through it. And we saved tens of thousands of dollars. We now have a four-year-old. I just took her for her checkup this morning. And, you know, it's just like amazing that we were able to get to that point. You know, now we actually were able to achieve some of these life goals we felt were completely impossible before. And that's by just leveraging, you know, federal programs that help save us money, you know, refinancing options and doing it the right way with certain strategies. And it's just really hard for any, you know, for the average person or just anyone in the, even financial advisors, you know, it's difficult to like figure out how to get through, you know, and gain clarity with this type of debt and with any sort of debt. So it's not as simple as just pay more and it goes away. You know, so we really focused on creating clarity around our situation, and that led to friends and friends of friends. You know, it kind of turned into a company when it started snowballing into, hey, like this can help anyone with debt, you know, if you really start to dig in. So that's when I decided to go full time, quit my, you know, cush engineering job and go full on in.
That's awesome. Yeah. And I definitely want to dive in there, but before, I think it's really interesting because you said that the key thing was that you felt like student loan debt, credit card debt was keeping you from starting a family.
Yep.
Right. Like that's the why. That's definitely the problem that you're solving, right? It's not getting out of student loan debt in itself. It's the fact that you weren't able to do the things that you wanted to do in life in order to be able, like, that's the problem that you're solving for people.
That's right. Yeah, that's a good point there. Is it's not just getting out of the debt, it's gaining clarity so that you can make other life decisions. I think that's stopping, you know, millions and millions of Americans from being able to do that is the lack of clarity. And honestly, it applies to things outside of debt. You know, all of us have some financial decision that would be beneficial that cognitively we're just not ready to do, right? So I think that it would take right now people are relying on like spreadsheets and Reddit threads to help gain clarity and make those decisions. And it's like, anytime you see a market like that, it's time to dig in and actually like apply some software that can solve for it.
Yeah, no, I think, yeah, you're spot on, Bobby. It's the personal finance space is a mess. And it feels like there's no one that really owns it, right? There's nobody that's really in charge of ensuring that, like, you know, from an entity perspective, right? There's no government agency that owns it. The education system doesn't own it. There's no company right. that does. Like, it's just kind of one of those things that you don't like that gets left behind. But it's like, so it's so important for everything else that we do in life.
Right. And there is, I mean, you have CFPB, which is looking out for borrowers. You have some borrower protection centers, especially in student loans. But still, it's just, we've got advocacy groups. There's no real, like, it's really up to the borrower. It's up to you as somebody with debt to just make the best next step. So that's why, exactly. You know, the onus is completely on the individual, which I think is a big opportunity in financial services and fintech in general, is anytime you have that opening and that ability to automate debt savings for a borrower, like it's a pretty magical experience.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so, yeah, I want to get back to this. So it's not just, as you said, putting more money towards your debt so that it goes away, right? You're talking about like navigating the refinancing options. How does that affect if you're in, say, like a federal program where you work for a state agency and you could have loan forgiveness, but if you refinance, right. that could actually hurt you in terms of not actually being able to qualify for programs. And like, there's just so much stuff. So talk to me about like, how did you start to like navigate that yourself? And then how have you made this super simple for others?
Yeah. So the way we navigate it for us is that it was started by, you know, really looking at all the different regulations tied to our loan types and then just trying to get good data around like, what's our situation? So that's always step one. You get a good picture of what that personal context is. So it's loan data, maybe some income information, stuff like that. And then you can basically, once you have that context and you have the rules through which they're, you know, what they're eligible for, you know, what forgiveness options. I mean, there's hundreds of forgiveness programs out there. People don't know that, you know, there's hundreds of them. State, depending on where you live or work, you're eligible for. And so, you know, just even understanding what you could have access to. And so, and then what the actual ramification of, say, enrolling in those programs or being able, having access to them. And, you know, what's nice now is that more people know about them. You know, have the Wall Street Journal's writing about revised pay as you earn, which is an income-driven plan and student loans, you know, that you're seeing more visibility into these plans. You know, back in 5-6 years ago, no one knew what those plans were. And I think that's nice to see now, but we need more visibility, I think. But yeah, once you have that data set and you have a best next step, then it's the action to do that next step. So those are the three sort of components that make up our system today, is syncing the actual data necessary, and then performing and automating the guidance and the action on that guidance all in app. That's really what we focus on. And, you know, what's really interesting is that it started with just us, but the system has improved. I mean, it's been almost 5 years since the company started. So, you know, we've done, like, at this point, almost every single permutation of student loan profile that you can think of. And in a way that a borrower doesn't need to know that much about student loans to be making the best decisions.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And so, yeah, talk to me. Are you direct to consumer? Are you B2B? Like, it's you kind of It looks like on the website that you might do a little bit of both or really focus on that B2B side. So I was curious, like, how do you approach it? Did it start one way and end up in the other? Like, how do you guys go to market?
Yeah, so we're B2B. That is our approach. We're embeddable tools for any financial app. So you can use our API to facilitate these interactions. You can use our widgets and different embeddable tools without deploying, like, basically low to no code in order to get this guidance in your app branded to your company. It didn't start there, though. You know, I started with, hey, I did this for us. Let's just go plan build. You know, it just started with guidance. Go plan build and put up a website, see what borrowers would be interested. Because at the time, you know, in that first year, you're just looking for, like, basically like validation points for yourself. Is this a business? And I think that's really what I was focused on in that first year. I know plan A won't always, is almost doomed to fail by default. So just go with the simplest thing and then iterate immediately. Like, the faster the learning, the better. So it went D2C. Got a bunch of borrowers, went down different channels, was on the phone with financial aid offices. I mean, I had like a giant list of channels. I was just knocking these down. Like, is there fruit there? Is there fruit there? Is there fruit there? And what I realized is it was getting really competitive on the CAC side of things. I didn't know that, like, people would just want a student loan app, for instance. I mean, there are certain segments that may, but at the time, the real problems I saw were in the infrastructure. So it was hard to get loan data. It was hard to get good guidance. It was hard for any financial app to be able to produce this stuff. And so that's when I had a financial advisor reach out and say, hey, can we get this? Can you just, like, send people to you, or can you build a tool for us? And I was like, what? You guys don't know how to do this stuff? And then sure enough, like, there was financial advisors and CFPs, like, had no tools, barely anything that they could use for this. And so that led down to the first customers were financial advisors in our B2B model, where we built a SaaS tool for them, essentially just licensing the admin tools I was using for plan building. And then, as I knew it wasn't like a high growth opportunity, but I knew there would be revenue there. No one would be looking at it. A niche product like that, you know, you could really get defensibility. So that's when I focused on, hey, let's just go all in on this market, you know. And then dozens and dozens of RIAs later, hundreds of financial advisors using this thing. You know, we got a lot of insights that we were able to expose via API. And that's when we realized we had something that every borrower in any app could benefit from. And that was really when we started raising money and getting into the more high growth phase of the business.
Gotcha. No, yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's awesome. That journey of starting direct to consumer, kind of validating the product, and then naturally seeing the opportunities that arise, as you said, where's that lowest hanging fruit, and it ended up being right. as that infrastructure tool. So where are you at today? So you've raised capital. Like, what stage of the business are you guys at?
Yeah, so we're seed stage technically. We've raised $11 million to date. Our investors are Lightspeed, Sound Ventures, Social Leverage, who is an early investor in Robinhood, lots of Stripe folks. So lots of the, you know, early Stripe or Cash App folks. And our main lead was Struck Capital, based in LA. So our first fund check was in term sheet was from them. So we've had two rounds, one 2.5 and one 8.5. And we, at this point are just really focused on execution and expanding now to other debt verticals. So we do have some pretty exciting things in the works for the fall in terms of expanding our debt guidance to cover any liability. And that's what we're cooking up now.
Nice. That's awesome. That's really exciting. What have been some of the things that you've like learned along the way, right? What are some of the key lessons as you've built up? Paid off.
Yeah, well, lots of lessons. I mean, I'm learning stuff still, right? You're always learning a lot. I think we did a good job of focusing on the real problems, never deploying something that didn't get used, like really focusing on like execution. And I've been a very execution, as a technical founder, I'm really focused on the execution, performance, analytics, what the data say, and getting proof and validation. Things that I've needed to like really, really focus on in terms of skill set are, as a solo founder, the sales portion, right? I'm a CEO, most of my job is selling. So, you know, I had to get better at, you know, being comfortable, not just in customer discovery, which I love doing, but also like hardcore selling, like being able to sell. the product. And I think that was took me like at least some ramp up time to get to that point. Now it's a very different story. And, you know, we brought in a lot of great sales leadership that's doing more of that work now, but it does that along the way. I think that was really a big lesson, was like having really, really solid sales acumen is critical to company building. And I think you can have the natural passion that, you know, I remember the emotional moments that took me to this, to the reason I'm working on this for 5 years, like what's kept this going, to the fact where this is my, like, I remember all that stuff. So that'll push me. But, at this stage, it's a whole different phase where, you know, it's not just about that. You have to be able to instill and scale that, you know, and be able to build processes around that. So it's been every quarter has its own sort of, lessons attached to it, I'd say. But yeah, those are sort of the having the sales backbone early and like bringing in talent that can help accelerate that is a big one that I think in the early days I underestimated.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, you've got the technical side, you've got the analytical side, but being able to develop the sales. What did you do to kind of supplement your learnings there, get better at it? And then, you know, hiring, I have a sales background, so like I know that hiring salespeople, they're getting good salespeople is tough because, you know, especially if that's not your area of expertise. So how did you manage that so that you could bring on a team that was really solid?
Yeah, I think you really start by focusing on who could be a great extension of you, really, like who you feel like has the sales background and the experience. Like I'm of the opinion you need more experience early. You do want to hire attitude over aptitude almost always, but you know, the early sales leadership, they're going to be the ones interacting with the customer. That's your company reputation there on the line. So I think I focused a lot on like, who do I feel like has the same sort of, values that I do and that other people at the company do. It helps if they're a bit technical or have sold a similar technical product to some degree. If you're in the API first game, that's really important. And I also think just in general, having like I mentioned before, the experience of having sold plenty and at this stage, those are the things that were kind of my parameters. And I wasn't perfect in sourcing candidates in the beginning because I had to go through a couple lessons of like who are the archetypes? And some were way out and some were right in the right place, you know? So it took a while to kind of filter. But at this point I know exactly, you know, the archetype that really does well here, who performs well, what kind of background they have. Like those things have become extremely clear at this point.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Bobby, I'm curious. So how have you been able to manage, like, obviously, and it sounds like you're expanding into other types of debt, but mm-hmm. student loans over the last, you know, 2.5 years or so have kind of been an interesting situation given the fact that we've had this moratorium on having to make payments and all that stuff. And then there's up in the air of whether there's forgiveness. Like, how has that affected you and your business and how you've approached the market?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely March 2020 was like a crazy time, you know, for everybody, obviously, but, you know, even more so for anyone in student loan land, because, you know, there was an increased amount of uncertainty, you know, what is I think it was like the mid-March moment when Trump said that they were going to freeze interest on student loans. I'm like, what are you talking about, in that moment? And a lot had to get figured out. I do think that the pause on student loan payments, the COVID forbearance pause, doesn't apply to all payments, but a majority of them in federal loan land. You know, that was a moment of, hey, you know, if you're trying to lower your student loan payment and it's zero, for instance, like you don't need to lower it anymore. So there's an immediate value prop issue, right? That we had to figure out and be like, okay, well, we need to kind of rethink how we're approaching the market. Our go-to-market strategy did need to shift. And we actually spent, you know, we tried to think about what are all the opportunities while payments are on pause. So we actually focused a lot on infrastructure and expanding capabilities and then having more full service. So when we went to market, for instance, you know, our customers would work with the Plaid Liabilities product and then filter that data to us. And then as this payment pause went on, the data was getting really, really bad because servicers were shifting a lot of different things. There was a lot of like figures that didn't look normal because it was such a weird, rare event. And so we just started adapting to that and partnering more with servicers. And we ended up working with the Student Loan Servicing Alliance. Scott Buchanan's on our cap table, really focused on how do we integrate best with servicers? How can we gain defensibility and a unique approach with the way that we could service, you know, borrowers, and started, surfacing the data ourselves. So we just widened our tool set so that we could be more effective when and have better conversion once, the payments resume. Now, I would have totally expected payments to resume by now. So it's definitely like, okay, they're going to push it. We just got notice yesterday, like there's an almost certainty that they're going to push it to January, maybe the summer. You know, like we can't really bet the business on the resumption event. For us, it's a 10x revenue event. So it's like a built-in like Super Bowl for us. But at the end of the day, like our expansion into other debts has had to be our focus because, you know, we were always planning to expand. This just kind of accelerated that, I think. And I think that we had, you know, adaptability is the key here. You can't just be stuck in your ways. You've got to, you know, refocus the company based on market conditions. The good news is, speaking of market conditions, is that everyone's really focused on their debt, and they will be over the next 6 to 12 years as all this sort of the issues with inflation and cost of goods for the average consumer. We're going to see lots of tailwinds and consolidations and how to automate, you know, balance transfers, things like that. So there's a lot of different automation needed. And I think that's really what we're excited to dig into is we're really well positioned for that. And when payments resume, it's just going to be gangbusters. We've also seen a really important regulatory change, which is the CAA 2021, which said that student loan payments could be lumped under tuition assistance for the workplace, which means an employer could get a tax benefit for making a contribution to a borrower with student loans. That changed a lot. And we're going to see a lot more of that, like student loans looking like a 401k with Secure Act 2.0. So that's a huge tailwind that, you know, we've been riding over the past year is the demand from employers for student loan benefits. And we power a bunch of student loan benefits tools where we work with 529 providers to bolt on student loan benefits. Like we're the rails for that. I think that's been a really meaningful revenue stream for us. And I think we focused a lot there in the past year.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, Bobby. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of interest, I think, on the employer side, especially for companies that hire a lot of recent grads or entry-level kind of positions in the workforce. And yeah, as you said, we definitely, there's definitely going to be no shortage of debt in the US. I think I saw a stat the other day that already with like inflation, everything else, like the default rates, so people are just stopped paying credit card payments again. And like, we're just we went from that like boom period where there was savings rate was at an all time high over, I don't know, however many years, for 20, 30, 40 years, to like way back down. And pendulum has swung back, unfortunately, to the right, to the debt side.
That's right. And one thing you did ask about, I wanted to make sure I covered, which was the potential for forgiveness. That's also a tailwind in the sense of we automate federal programs in student loan land. And you have to apply for that forgiveness. You know, it's means tested. So I think those are the things that, like, there's all these sort of opportunities that will pop up, you know, but the reality is student loans, I think, will be on pause for a minute, you know, and I think that's one of the things that, depending on how the midterms go, it's a complete political decision that's up to the White House. There's no sort of other influence at this point as there was probably a year ago.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Bobby, this started, and you mentioned this when you talked about what motivates you, why you do the 14-hour days, you know, and all that stuff, right? Can you talk to me about how your relationship with money has changed over the course of building the business, but also like when you were going on your own journey of realizing that the reason you and your wife didn't start a family was because you were in so much debt, and what you've kind of learned over your own journey?
Yeah, there's a couple things I learned. You know, when you're in it and you maybe don't know all the nuances of the types of debt you have, and we're going to see this with buy now, pay later. There's going to be a reckoning. Like borrowers don't totally understand that debt. They don't know it's debt. It kind of looks like student loans because when you take out student loans, most people think it's a grant because it says federal student aid on it. So you assume that it's like not a loan. That's actually commonly something we heard from financial aid offices way back when. and borrowers. I didn't even know that I had debt, you know, when they graduate. And I think that that is just like, you know, and that's the relationship my wife and I had with our student debt is like, you know, we did not understand it. It was really just difficult. And when you do understand it, it's a scary moment. And I think the difference between student debt and other types of debt is that it's an emotional debt. It's a debt on your brain. You know, you can't like tie it to an asset in the same way or an action or some, oh, I made a mistake and needed to consolidate credit cards. Like, it's a really different experience. So at the time, I felt like we had nothing, there's nothing we could do. And that was sort of my relationship with it was, what are we going to do? And then we can't do anything. You know, there's like no, like, we feel like we're just always going to have this debt forever and ever and ever. And that's what most borrowers feel. The reality is that every borrower has options, every single borrower. And we have not seen a borrower that does not have some option they can do, they can employ, that can save them money or help them gain clarity. And I think that's changed my attitude towards some of the ways I think about products at PayItUp and how I think about money in general is that there are always options. And I think that that gives if you get clarity on those options, then you can make decisions, right? So I really do obsess about this like financial decision layer that needs to exist. I think in the past, it's been sort of financial advisors that have done this stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, we expect to gain guidance in app. And I think that's what I really think about. You know, how much should you be contributing to your 401k based on your situation? And I think about the financial things I'm not doing right now. And instead of it bringing me anxiety, I kind of get excited because I'm like, when you dig in, you see there's options, availability, there's access that is built into these products that is just not being surfaced. And I think that's really changed my attitude towards money is that, you know, there are so many different, I don't want to say loopholes. I mean, it's basically found money that exists out there. And there's ways for you to access that as a consumer. And that's something where it's a less fatalistic view than I think most borrowers have to go through, where they're like, oh, I have 20K in credit card debt. I make 50K a year. I'm doomed. I'm just going to default on it. You know, it's just like, that's not the reality. The reality is they probably have a ton of options. So I think that's a big piece of what's changed and shifted in my attitude, at least on the debt side, but with money in general, I think you can view it that way. I'd say that's the main thing.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you sharing. And yeah, that progression and, you know, seeing optimism where before it could be analysis paralysis or stress of like, what do I do or how do I get out of this? And, you know, you hit on something that I really believe in is that the challenge is that, you know, first it's getting the information, but then it's the action layer. How do we actually get people to take actions and see the options and the opportunities? So that really resonated with me, what you said there, Bobby.
Yeah, I mean, actions are a key element of our business because if you don't automate, like we're the first ones to digitize and make an API for federal program enrollment, you know, just gaining that innovation, right? There's actually a data store for this thing, you know, there's actually a way to do this. If you push the envelope hard enough, how could, like, for instance, right now, we're going to be introducing a product that has, you know, fully refi in app. Right? That's never happened, a full credit application and app for refi. So these are all things that, like, if you push the envelope in the action, much more likely a borrower will do it. Much more likely they'll do it because also it's helped them financially in some way. Like our system literally guards against anything that would hurt the borrower. So you have confidence that, you know, we wake up every day knowing we're saving people so much money, right? So that's the kind of benefit. And so our partners get to also share in that, you know, and I think that's the value we bring to the ecosystem that's a bit different. And I think that's been informed by my early experiences, you know, and being like, what do I have to literally spend months to do? Like, and send a piece of paper in the mail? Like, can I fax it? Who will get it? What, you know, it has my social security number on it. You know, it's just like, it's a different world now. People don't act that way. People don't mail stuff. You have to be able to automate it.
Yeah, no, it's a great point, Bobby. And yeah, I love that, you know, what you highlighted there of just how important that automation and action layer really is. What would you say is the best investment that you've made?
Well, that's an interesting question. Best investment. Well, I think that making the investment in yourself is going to be the biggest thing. I think you probably get that answer a lot, but I do think, like, I remember saying, okay, I have X amount of money that I'll put into just paying my expenses and we'll see where this goes for a year. That way we could, you know, me and my wife could shield like kind of us from the business risk a little bit for at least 1 year, right? You give yourself a year runway. So that's a personal investment. I think that will always pay off no matter what. Even if it doesn't go well, you just go get a job or whatever you were doing before. You know, like I think the perceived risk of company building is exactly that. It's perceived. Yeah. I think that given your risk tolerance, almost anyone could, you know, depending on the risk tolerance. But I would say, you know, and I you know, I've been able to make some angel investments too, which has been really cool. I think that the reality is the one that's really paid off is the career risk, I would say. I think that that's something that it's kind of hard to quantify because it's affected a lot of people. And that's really all I care about. It's like the impact. And at the end of the day, like being a participant in a new industry, like I think that's the thing that I'm excited about, and making a bet on our team that we can be a leader in that industry. You know, it's worthy of the 5 years, and probably 10 it will continue to be. So I think that's kind of my immediate answer.
Yeah. No, I love that. Love that, Bobby. Yeah, and the risk side, right? Making sure that career risk, that's been the best investment. Now, we don't always make good decisions. Can you talk to me about a dumb financial decision that you've made that you regret?
Yeah, there was like a couple. there's a couple related to student loans. Like I remember, there's like small things in college. Like I had to like double pay rent one time, and I was like I signed a lease for something too early, and I like had to do double rent, and I had zero money in my bank account. So that was a stupid ass thing to do. But I also think, you know, there's little things like that where you're like, oh my God, I just like, what? I can't even eat. But you know, another thing was when I graduated, I had a company at Michigan. We raised some money, like a seed round, 2009, 2010. Very tough fundraising environment back then, even compared to now. And I remember, you know, we weren't taking an income as founders. It was early enough where we were just trying to make this thing work. It was earlier stage than what we are now. And I think, you know, there's a couple of things that happened where one was I remember calling my servicer because my student loan payment was crazy and being like, what can I do about this? And they said, oh, don't worry, we'll just pause payments. You'll be fine. I'm like, nice. And what I didn't know is that I went into forbearance and I totally qualified for these federal programs that we enroll people in all day. And I realized I did the math later. That was a $20,000 phone call. If I had just been like, no, I want to see what other options are available. $20,000 phone call. And those phone calls like happened a lot, you know, and there's a lot of borrowers out there going through that. So that's another sort of like data point that we pushed. Yeah, we can create better borrower outcomes than that.
Yeah. What's tricky is I bet that felt like that was probably a good decision at the time too, right? You're like, oh, sweet. Like, right. So you come away feeling good. And then it's only in retrospect that you're like, wow, that was not ideal.
Yeah. Should have Googled that a little harder. Also, like, I think the reality was there just wasn't good visibility at the time. Still not a lot of clarity and visibility. So it actually relates very directly to the problem we're solving today. But I spent 3 years in a forbearance period that I had. What that happens in that period is your interest capitalizes, so your interest becomes principal, which means you're building interest on interest. It's insane. So whereas with an income driven plan, you have interest subsidies. The government, Uncle Sam's paying a lot of it. So I think that that's one. And there's like a bunch of like little ones. And honestly, the, you know, I remember having like I think I was in LA when we were building the company, and I had like $2,000 in a bank account, and I put $1,500 of it on a deposit for a car because I needed a car suddenly. And I'm like, wait a second, how do I pay? You know, like stuff like that in the early days when like things were just like a little volatile. There were tons of little moments like that phone call. So I think that I would say that really informed how I approached the second company is you know, actually putting yourself in a position where the risk is mitigated and you're not putting that kind of stress on other people or family members. I think that's an important lesson in my entrepreneurial journey.
Yeah, no, very, very important one. Bobby, last thing I've got for you, right? You're building this company, you're 5 years in, you're seeing a lot of success. You've kind of got this vision for the future. Like, how do you define success for yourself? Like, what does success look like?
Yeah, I mean, success is, I alluded to it a little bit, but success to me is the ability to maximize the impact while I'm here on Earth. So, you know, my time, I have a finite amount of, say, companies I can build or products I can work on or things I can do in like the finite time I have. So success to me is maximizing the potential impact that I make with that time. So when I, and a positive impact, not just like, you know, making a splash to make a splash. I think the thing that, and that's important when you're building a company, earlier you're like, oh, maybe I'll be like wealthy or whatever. And it's like, your chances of that are pretty low. You know, your chances of being wealthy become, aren't, that's not why you do it. If you do it for that reason, you're more likely to fail for sure. I was just really, like, what was important to me was the impact. And like, you know, the fact that there's all these other like debt company, debt API companies and student loan APIs and things like that, that exist when we were the first student loan, quote unquote, API around the same time Plaid did liabilities, like that we got to push and really energize an entire industry. I love it. I want there to be 10 more of those types of companies. I want to push the envelope there. And so that to me, success is being able to, obviously, like we want to succeed as a company and build our revenue stream and grow. But with the, if you focus on impact and have the bias towards impact, you'll always figure those pieces out. Those are just a piece of the journey that help you gain leverage to keep moving mountains. So I think that that's the way I think about it.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that framing. Bobby, this has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate you sitting down. If you could please share with the audience, if there's any final words, feel free to share those as well, but also let folks know how they can connect with you outside of this podcast.
Yeah, best way is over email, just bobby@payitoff.io. I am on Twitter too, as Bo Matson. I do, you know, if you're working on a financial app or you have, you know, anybody you know that might benefit from these types of tools and technology, then we are all ears. You can book time with our team and we can tell you all about it.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Bobby. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it, William.
On your way out, please share the podcast with others. It's the only way that the community grows and others hear these incredible stories from entrepreneurs and top performers. And of course, pound that subscribe button so you get notified when new episodes drop every Friday. I'm William Glass, CEO and co-founder of Ostrich, and of course, your host of the Silicon Alley Podcast. Have a very profitable day. You got no time to waste, but still you hesitate. Caught in a circle saying, I'll never leave this place. Ooh. Some words got you searching from the bright side over and over until you look.